Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is December 7, 2018. It is a cold and gray day here in Nashville. They say we might get some snow tonight. It will be a good day to get some indoor projects accomplished. Nashville has become a place of constant change. Whole new neighborhoods are springing up all around us. As you drive through the city, one frequently will become disoriented because a landmark has been torn down and replaced with an unfamiliar development. Not all the changes are for the good, of course. Some seem extraordinarily wasteful. On the other hand, some change is for the good. The Bicentennial Mall, just north of the Tennessee State Capitol, has recently welcomed a brand new Tennessee State Museum building. It is monumental, to say the least. Yesterday, I visited the new State Museum for the first time and had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with Jim Hubler. Jim serves as the senior curator of art and architecture for the State Museum. He truly is the dean of individuals serving in our cultural institutions here in Tennessee. He talks with us about the history of the museum and about the features of the new facility. And so I do hope you will enjoy our interview. By the way, if you're looking for Christmas gifts, be sure to check out the Tennessee State Museum shop. They have some beautiful and authentic things for sale there. Jim Hubler, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Good to see you again.
Jim, we're here at the Tennessee State Museum new facility today here in the north, just north of the Tennessee State Capitol.
200 years and coming.
Jim, it's really a terrific place. I had a chance to walk around for 45 minutes to an hour before we sat down, and man, it really is a tremendous, tremendous place. And it's something worthy of anyone spending several hours touring.
Right. Well, it's one of the best state museums in the country, and the collection is why it's that. Ralph E.W. Earle was the first professional artist to work in the state, and he came here in 1817 to do a life-size portrait of America's new hero, Andrew Jackson. He convinced Jackson to sit for that, and then he toured that painting.
Folks, this is a live broadcast.
We are live in the museum.
Here we are.
So Earle toured that painting nationally, charging admission. Then he came back to Nashville, and he remembered that Peale had opened America's first museum in Philadelphia. And he opened the first museum outside of Philadelphia and on this side of the Appalachian Mountains on the public square in Nashville. Wow. That's the last time we've had a building for the collection.
Well, that's amazing. Jim, I want to... Usually, when we in these interviews, my audience likes to hear a little bit about the person that I'm interviewing and how they got interested in what they're doing. And you are among the elder statesmen of the cultural resources community in Tennessee. But you've been doing this a long time. How in the world did you get interested in this? And what is your training and your background?
My childhood was in Toledo, Ohio, and they have one of, I think, the best art museums in the country, one of the top 10. And before I even started school, my parents took me to the art museum, and you could see things like ancient Egyptian sandals and sculpture and reliefs from Assyria all the way up to the present day. So I loved history from the get-go and always knew I wanted to do something with history. So at the University of Georgia, I had a double major in history and education, thinking, well, what do you do with history? Maybe you can teach it. And then I did student teaching, and I thought, no, you're not going to do that. So I came up here to Vanderbilt and got my master's degree. My first job was with the Tennessee State Library and Archives. And I worked with the legislature in doing campaign finance reports and doing legislative recordings and cataloging some of the manuscript in paper collections of the state. And then I was at an archival conference down at the old UT Nashville, and Dick Wiesner, one of the old presidents of the Tennessee Historical Society, called and said, I have to have lunch with you today. I said, okay, well, I'm in the conference, we're breaking for lunch. So we met at Satsuma, And he said, I want you to come to work for the Tennessee Historical Society. We're going to retire the director, and we want you to be the next director. So I worked with them from 1978 till 1988. And the society being private meant that I could lobby.
Sure.
So we just happened to have both the House and Senate finance chairs, John Bragg and Doug Henry, as members of the Historical Society. They love Tennessee history. And they helped fund a number of projects. We did a catalog on landscape and genre painting in Tennessee with an exhibit the museum did. We did a catalog on portrait painting in Tennessee. And two friends, Nathan Harsh and Dorita Williams, told me they were both independently going to do books on the history of Tennessee handmade furniture. I said, well, both of them won't sell. Why don't you cooperate together and I'll get the money from the legislature? And they did, and we published The Art and Mystery of Tennessee Furniture. And while all of this was going on, I'd noticed that the Capitol was deteriorating. So I made a report and took it to Doug Henry about all of the damage being done to the building by just deferred maintenance. And he took the report to Governor Alexander. He loved history, and he said, we need to do something like about that. So he created a Capitol Commission to oversee the restoration of the Capitol. And when we wrapped up his term, Bragg and Henry created a position of curator of the Capitol, and I applied for it, and I got it.
That's just, you know, a great story. And for those who may be from listening from outside of Tennessee, if you've come to Nashville, you must go see the Capitol. It is a spectacular building. The old Supreme Court Library up on the, I guess, the top floor.
Yeah, the State Library, and then the Supreme Court Chamber downstairs.
Right. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff to see.
Yeah.
Now the Tennessee State Museum, as an institution, I guess, had their first public building in the old War Memorial.
Right. The Tennessee Historical Society started collecting things when Earl's Museum dissolved. They ultimately inherited most of that. And from the 1850s till about the mid-1880s, they were in the library chamber up in the Capitol. So those old Gears photographs that have flags and portraits and artifacts all over the room, that's essentially the THS collection.
I got you.
The state told them, well, we're running out of room. You need to go somewhere else. So they took all of their books, their manuscripts, their portraits of the governors, and moved to the Watkins Institute down on Church Street,
right,
where the library is now.
Right.
And they were there until the 1920s, when the state was finally building the War Memorial Building. And under the auditorium, there was going to be a war museum for World War I veterans to put their artifacts. And the state in 1927 then came to an understanding with the Historical Society that they would take their collection in trust with the state. So it all wound up at the State Library and Archives, all of the artifacts as well as the paper objects. Then in 1937, the state decided they would consolidate collections, artifact collections, and create a state museum. So it was put in that space in the basement of the War Memorial. So the museum was in that basement until about 1981, and then it moved into the basement of the Polk Building, where TPAC has rental space.
Right. Now, the Polk Building was brand new at that,
yes,
at that time.
Yes, yeah.
And the space, considering what you had been in...
Oh, that was light years ahead.
Was
exponentially bigger, too.
Yeah, it had facilities to, you know, bring in large trucks and,
yeah,
things of this nature, which...
Big touring exhibits.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was a great little place to have a museum for a few years,
I suppose. Yeah, yeah. Well, for example, the Mr. Ishibashi, which is stone bridge in Japanese, so he translated his name into English and flipped it to bridge stone.
Oh, okay.
He put together the biggest collection in Japan of Western art outside of their national gallery, and Bridgestone still owns it. They have a gallery there in Tokyo. And it had only left Tokyo once in the early 1960s to go to Paris because he really liked Impressionists and Post-Impressionists. So we asked if it could be borrowed, and that's the only other time it's ever left Japan. And it was a huge exhibit at the State Museum, and we had people standing in long lines to get in to see it.
What years was that?
That was in the right around 1988, 89,
gotcha.
I think.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, I can remember Lois Riggins was the person I was acquainted with back in the days.
That right,
I was
she's the one that worked that deal and got it here.
Working in state parks, and she would pride herself on getting these special exhibits mm-hmm. in. I remember mm-hmm. that. I also remember talking to her about her frustration, I guess it would be the only way to put it, of having so many artifacts that the public would never, ever see, and the limitations of space and that
right.
and that sort of thing. And
right.
so tell us, now this new facility here on the just north of the Capitol, I guess mm-hmm. it's on the Bicentennial Mall.
It is.
What was the vision for this facility, and when did this start?
Lois had been hoping to get a museum for many, many years, soon after we moved into the Polk building, in fact, because it became evident that if we were going to get more of the artifacts out, there wasn't enough room in there. This building has roughly the same square footage for exhibits, but this is a much more flexible building. The cases are much easier to get into and change things, and there are six changing spaces within the flow of the building to change out the collection. There's probably a little under 200,000 pieces in the collection, and you're going to look at here maybe 2,000 pieces. But with the capability of rotating exhibits, we can get a lot more of it out on exhibit. And most museums only exhibit between 2 and 4% of their collections anyway, because you're never going to have a building large enough to put it all out, and you wouldn't want to. Some of it's too light sensitive.
Right.
Some of it, how many of the same Monet balls do you want to see in a case?
Sure. I can remember being taken behind the scenes, and my old friend Paul Schrag was one of the exhibit crew mm-hmm. back in the early days of the Tennessee State Museum.
Yeah.
Being taken behind the scenes to see the collection of quilts that you have.
And it's much bigger now.
and I didn't see any quilts out on display today as I walked around. That doesn't mean they're not out there, but they're very tender items.
They are. They're light sensitive.
Right.
So one of the coming up exhibits is going to be an exhibit on Tennessee quilts, and that'll open next year.
Fantastic.
February, in fact.
That will be fun. So in this, you know, I can just imagine, this building just opened like last month.
Yeah.
And as I toured around today, I saw there were still some installation going on. It was fun to actually watch the care that was being taken with the artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
What a monumental task.
Oh, it's huge.
To think about how this building would be, what the look of it would be. Tell us more about who was involved in that, the contractors?
Governor Haslam is the whole reason we have this building.
Right.
He was a history major, and right after his first inauguration, he asked Dan Pomeroy, our chief of collections, to show him collection storage. And Dan said when he went back into collection storage, like, he was going like, wow, I love this. And from then, he knew that we needed a new building in a bigger place, a much more prominent place. This is the first time we've been not underground in almost 100 years.
Sure, sure.
We're visible, and there's parking, and there's flexibility here.
And y'all are right next to the Nashville Farmers Market.
Yeah, great place to go get lunch.
Fun place to visit.
Yeah.
The exhibits, I mean, I remember years ago you all had your own exhibit crew that mm-hmm. built and just installed mm-hmm. exhibits. I think with something as monumental as this, you didn't move any of the previous exhibits. Tell us how that happened.
Well, the Lord Group, Barry Lord, formed a company up in Canada that helps museums internationally plan for exhibits, new buildings, all of that sort of thing. So the Lord Group came up with a plan of what the needs would be for the new building, how many square feet for each component of the programs in the museum. And then they contracted with Turner to build the building, with D&P to do the exhibits. And we're still working through that process. They told us, in fact, that when we started, it was at least a five-year project, but we only had 2.5 years to do it in.
Wow.
So we're still fine-tuning here and finishing the building. But it looks fabulous. And when you're standing in the lobby, you were talking about the Capitol, it's oriented with a slight tilt. So from the lobby, you're looking down at downtown Nashville and the state capitol down the length of the Bicentennial Mall. The Carillon is right at the front door, and if you go out at on the hour, you'll hear a Tennessee song out there coming from the Carillon. At night, the view out there is gorgeous, with the city lit up and the Capitol lit up.
Sure.
And we are open Thursdays.
I'm looking out that window that you've just described, and the Capitol, of course, is set up 100 feet or more in elevation from here.
Yeah.
It's quite an impressive view. And, of course, you're right next door to the Bicentennial State Park, which I guess that's the Carillon you're referring to, which is in the park.
And they're building a new state library across the mall from us.
Of course, there's you have a water feature out the front here, which is
we
quite
do.
Beautiful.
A waterfall with a little stream.
Let's talk about the elements that you have inside. And you come in the door and you go up to the second floor, which is where your exhibits really are for the public to look at. How are they organized?
Well, they start with geological time, laying down the rock that will someday become Tennessee. And there's an interesting projection in there where it's the globe and how the continental plates shift around. And there's an outline that shows where Tennessee is in those millions of years, where it's going to be someday. It goes from that into actual rocks that were found in Tennessee. There's one in there that amazes me. It shows a horseshoe crab fossil. There's another one that's a crab fossil. There's from the Gray site up near Johnson City, we have a reconstruction of a red panda that used to live in Tennessee.
Wow.
Going from that, you come to the first Tennesseans and their history here for thousands of years. Recently, we acquired some just amazing artifacts from a dry cave. There is a piece of footwear that's a couple of thousand years old that survived in a cave.
Now, which cave is this now?
Well, we don't discuss that because somebody else might want to go in there and see what they could find.
I got you. East, middle, or west?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Somewhere in Tennessee.
In Tennessee.
Well, all right.
There's also a basket fragment, which is, again, over 1,000 years old. So amazing things that have been found recently that we have out on exhibit. There's also a Indian dugout canoe that we acquired several years ago.
Way long. It's, 40 feet long?
Yeah, it's a one tulip poplar log, and one end of it has been cut off. It was found about 1800 in a sandbar in the Cumberland River, and we've just had it carbon dated. It dates to about 1750.
Wow. Wow.
And Ridley and Irene Wills, two friends of mine, recently donated a fabulous painting to it. It's called Toqua, which was a Cherokee town in the 18th century up along the Little Tennessee River. And when Louis-Philippe and his brother were hiding from the Reign of Terror in France after the French Revolution, their father had been beheaded by the Revolution. So they came to America, they met President Washington, he gave them some travel tips, they went to see Niagara Falls, and they decided they wanted to cross the mountains and visit the Cherokee. So at Toqua, the younger brother climbed up on an Indian mound and did sketches of the Cherokee town, and in that, there was one of those canoes. Also, he took those sketches back to Europe when they finally got back there, and they lived in Britain for a while because Napoleon was a problem for them as well. And he did an oil painting then based on all of his drawings, and it was the earliest representation by a European of a native settlement in Tennessee.
Wow.
That disappeared for probably close to 200 years. It's recently surfaced in Australia.
Wow.
Where a collector of Polynesian artifacts had been told it was a Polynesian scene. There's not a palm tree in it. but an Italian did a copy of it about the same time. That's the painting that we have.
All
so
right.
It also shows something unique. There is a Cherokee summer lodge, and there's only two representations, I believe, of those from the 18th century, and this is one of them.
Wow. Really terrific. And I noticed that there's a lot of the early contact artifacts from the early contact, Fort Loudoun and some of those sorts of places.
Right, from archaeology, which the state did at the Loudoun site and Bledsoe's Lick, a number of sites here. There are beads and European trade things that they found, some metal implements that were found there. So we go from contact with the Europeans to European settlement in the state, and then the Trail of Tears, the removal of the native population from the state, and then into building the state, the antebellum period, the Civil War and Reconstruction, the New South, the early 20th century, and then bringing it right up to the present day. There are two changing spaces for larger exhibits at the end of all of that. One is the musical heritage of the state. We're still building that out. It's not all complete, but you can go into it. And one on Red Grooms, a native Tennessee artist.
The musical heritage one, and as I quickly walked through this afternoon, was a Mike Kerb contribution to the museum.
Right, he funded that.
Of course, he's a renowned musician, and I guess he used to be the lieutenant governor of California or something.
Well, Kerb Music, and he owns Ocean Way, and
Well, it's quite an impressive display that they have there of all the musical heritage of Tennessee.
Yeah.
And now, in the Red Grooms, for those that are not familiar with Red Grooms, how can we describe him?
His artwork is very whimsical. It's almost cartoon-like. He grew up here. He grew up on the battlefield at Nashville. He loves local history. And he went to Hillsborough High School. He and Walter Nestrick were buddies there in high school. They took art classes together at Watkins and some private lessons. On the 15th of December, Red is going to be here, and we're going to have a conversation with him here in the auditorium about his life and career. Well, after he left here, he went up to Provincetown. He studied with great artist Hans Hoffman. He spent some time at the Art Institute of Chicago in school. And he's been working essentially in New York City most of his adult life. But his artwork is very, very fun. He recently did a show with us on Civil War images. He's done a whole series on great artists and some other historical figures. But it'll be a fun conversation with him, talking about his life and his work.
Well, you know, he was responsible for doing the Tennessee Carousel, which for some, I guess a couple of years at least, was there on the riverfront in Nashville.
Right.
Where is that now?
We own it. It was transferred ownership to the State Museum. And the hope is that we can find a sponsor to put it back together. I did some investigation for the state into what that would take by calling the people that run the one at Dumbo down under the Brooklyn Bridge in New York, and the one that's in Yerba Buena in San Francisco. It probably take a couple of million dollars.
Okay.
It would need a building. The building would need land.
Right.
There would need to be staffing, insurance, and engineer to keep it running.
Sure.
But there are also ways that you can make it help pay for itself. You can rent it for birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, you know, weddings, all sorts of things.
Well, it's a fun thing. And
And it's history. All of the figures are historical figures.
The good news is that it's in your hands and it's not going to waste away and be destroyed.
Right.
So there's always the potentiality
We're working to try and find a sponsor for it and some land for it.
Super. So if a person is planning a trip to come to Nashville and they want to come and see this museum, how much time should they allocate for that? Are there tour guides that are available to take them through? Tell us about the mechanics of that.
Well, you know, our main visitor focus is Tennessee school children, trying to give them a sense of their heritage and their background. So when they come in off of Rosa Parks, there's a whole educational suite of rooms there to orient them, to have activities, to show them a map of the state and different geographical and historical sites around the state. And then when they go upstairs, they have guided tours through there. Adults, if they want a group tour like that, they would need to book that, of course, because it's a matter of staffing.
But that's something that can be done.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Now, there is no charge for this facility.
We've always been free and still are.
It was fun to walk into this museum today and not encounter someone taking my money.
Right. We will if it's a voluntary contribution.
I'm certain that's true. So tell us a little bit about what's expected to happen in terms of special events. We talked about Red Grooms. Any other special events coming up in the near
future?
Well,
the quilt exhibit that's going to be coming up, we're working on one on Tennessee foodways. Rob DeHart, one of our curators, is putting that together.
Yeah.
And since we're such a changing state, too, there are all of these different people from other countries coming into the state. The foodways are changing, too. So, like the hot chicken that we have here now, that's something that's been here a long time, but we're just really discovering it. So we'll discuss all of those different things. Ashley Howell, our director, has told me that she'd like me to think about doing an exhibit on the history of art in the state and take both of the 4,000 square foot galleries and hopefully do a catalog then based on parts of our collection that would be on exhibit in that and get that out in the public sphere. We're also working to try and put a lot of our collection online. Low-res images that people can't reproduce because, you know, there's copyright issues involved in all of that. But make the public aware of things that aren't currently on exhibit but hopefully will be someday, and the depth and breadth of the collection here.
I know that you all have a presence on social media so that my listeners can know where to find that. Tell us where you are on Facebook and other places.
There's TN for me, which was done for school children.
TN for me.
With the numeral four.
Okay.
So they can look up a history of the state, and if they've got a writing project, they can dig deep into that and find out. And then, of course, the TennesseeStateMuseum.org, we've got a website. We're on Facebook. Joe Pagetta, our PR person, works on that. We've just hired somebody to be our social media person. So we're trying to reach out to the community in many, many ways.
Well, that's a terrific way to stay in touch with what's going on here. I had seen some notices of the Red Grooms things happening on social media previously.
One of the big leaps we've made here, too, is electronically. Out on the exhibit floors, there are tables where, like in the Civil War section, you can tap on like Knoxville and learn about the Battle of Knoxville and the occupation of Knoxville. You can tap on Memphis or Chattanooga or Shiloh or specific battles and dig deep into that. In the music gallery, there's a table where you can listen to brief segments of popular musicians. And then there are headsets if you want to hear the whole song. So we've found, of course, that the younger crowd really loves that. One of our people, her grandson, who's 18, was with the family, and they were up in the Civil War section. They're going, come on, we're going to leave. No, this is great. And, you know, they practically had to drag him out of there away from the electronic table.
Just to see where things were happening on the landscape.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Jim, you've been so courteous and thoughtful to meet with us today and talk with about what's going on here at the State Museum. I really appreciate the time you've spent with us.
Thank you, Mark.
All right.